Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, March 12th, 2018 edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. I am your host, Robert Vallejos, coming to you once again live this week. I do apologize to any of our listeners who normally catch us right in this spot on Blog Talk Radio. For some reason, had some major technical issues and we could not record the show live. We did, however, get you a show, myself and Rick Montia, that we had a decent show, all things considered. But we could not get you that show live, and I do apologize for that. I know we have some callers that call regularly, and I don't want to lose touch with any of those callers simply based on technical issues. So again, apologize for that. We're back live and in living color, as living color as you can be over to audio. So I hope you rejoin us this week for the regular format of the show. Now, I've mentioned those callers. If you want to get on and be a caller, if you want to change the direction of the show, if you have something to add, something you agree with what us, that you want to reinforce, something you disagree with us on, and you want to pose the other side of the argument, or perhaps just a question for us, give us a call. That's what makes this live format so great, is that you can let your voice be heard. That number to call is 515-605-9345, and after you call that number, if you want to be on, press 1 on your phone to let me know to bring you on. If you don't press 1, I won't know to bring you on, and you'll just sit there on hold the entire show, and we will not hear from you. You can also always get to us at email. That's MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That inbox is open any time, day or night. Really good way to get some long-form questions into us. Maybe even some questions that we need to do a little bit of studying on or some deep diving into. That's a perfect place. And of course, hit us up on Twitter at MMA Torch. Really direct way to get a hold of us. And we will respond immediately, especially during the show. And we will read your tweet on the air if it's deemed worthy and relevant to what we're talking about. Now, this week, I am joined by my regular co-host and my tag team partner over at MMA Torch, Zach Hader. And Zach, how are you doing this week?
I am doing fantastic. I was glad to be back and excited for the show.
Okay, now you weren't going to be on last week regardless of the technical issues. Did you have anything to do with our issues? Did you pull the plug or put the sabotage in?
Oh, man, you know, I'm keeping that very close to the vest. But, you know, I like shows when I'm on them. So I have to make sure that the show would not go on without me. No, I'm just kidding. No, I plead the fifth.
How very Triple H of you. You know, trying to make yourself look good, but then on the back end, you're not going to claim any fault whatsoever. I see the game you are playing with me.
Yeah, no, again, no comment.
All right, well, Zach's silence is deafening on that issue. You know what they say when someone has a no comment, what are they hiding? Okay, Zach, now, despite the issues that you and I are clearly now having and the chemistry that's been broken, we do have some fights to talk about this weekend, believe it or not. It's a Fight Pass weekend. We had the rare weekend off from MMA last weekend after just a brutal stretch of a ton of MMA week after week. We had the weekend off, but we get back to it with a Fight Pass card. UFC Fight Night 127 coming to you from London, England, the O2 Arena. Usually a pretty interesting show that they put out in London once a year. This is a card that many people speculated would be the farewell card from Michael Bisping. It doesn't seem like he was able to get an opponent booked in the right time, and nothing couldn't come together the way that they wanted to do that. But you do have a somewhat intriguing main event with some heavyweights. Fabricio Werdum will take on Alexander Volkov. Werdum has been on a bit of a roll recently. He had the late pullout at the pay-per-view back in October. He ended up having to fight Walt Harris on short notice and made quick work of Walt Harris. And then he also he dropped the decision to Alistair Overeem back in the summer. I'll rewind a little bit, but he looked very good in that fight. And then he took out Marcin Tybura in the main event of the Fight Night in November. Very underwhelming fight, but Werdum did look good nonetheless. He's right there in the mix in heavyweight and probably will be getting consideration for a title shot. I don't know if he gets a title shot because that division seems to be a bit held up. But, Zach, do you see him having any trouble with Volkov in this fight?
No, I don't. I don't. And that's coming from somebody who's not a huge Werdum fan. I just think that he, aside from being on an incredible roll his last couple fights, he appears confident. He hasn't just won his fights, but he's dominated the last couple and really in flawless fashion in a lot of ways. I think he just keeps up the pace here. Everybody knows he's gunning for another title shot down the road. Obviously, they need to wrap things up with Stipe and Cormier at some point to get there. But I think Werdum is still on a mission to be in that picture. And I think he, you know, keeps on that path after Saturday night.
I'm with you there. Volkov has a pretty impressive streak of his own, and he recently took out Stefan Struve at a Fight Night card that was also a Fight Pass exclusive card. And that was that weird fight we were talking about at the time of the two skinny heavyweights going toe-to-toe with each other. And he made quick work of Struve, but I think as we even saw this past week at the pay-per-view UFC 222 a couple weeks ago, Struve is not the same fighter that he once was. So I'm not putting much stock into what Volkov does here. It's funny, though, Werdum just stays at that forefront, and I don't know if the UFC is really invested in what he's going to do or what he wants to do. He has made some noise, however, in the past week about possibly transitioning. Initially, the report said to the WWE, but I think there was a bit of a language misconception. He said he wanted to do WWE-style fighting, which he explained in further detail to him meant like a Lucha Libre style of pro wrestling. Do you think Fabricio Werdum would be a good pro wrestler, Zach?
Oh, gosh, you know, he certainly wouldn't be a good lucha wrestler. I can tell you that right now. But, I mean, it's tough to say. It's tough to say. I mean, I think he's got a personality, sure. I think he's got, you know, a personality that is interesting, to say the least, whether you know, are warm to it or cold to it. I think it's out there. That said, he just doesn't – he's not going to be a humongous draw like a Ronda Rousey or Brock Lesnar. So he really would have to move into that universe, truly understanding what pro wrestling is. And I'm not sure. I don't get the feeling that he, by those comments, I don't get the feeling that he knows the business or the territory he's stepping into. So, you know, to answer the question, no, I don't think he's a good fit for the WWE. Can it happen? Possibly, but I just don't see it in the future.
Yeah, on the Lucha League, I mean, obviously he wouldn't be a luchador, but I think the idea is that he would fight more in the Mexican style or the non-WWE or even in Japanese wrestling. I think that's more what he meant. I do think there's just a bit of the nuance of language that got it, because he wanted to make it very clear that he didn't really care for the WWE style. He's very much one of those guys that has used, whether knowingly or unknowingly, used a lot of WWE-ish tactics, though, to promote himself throughout his career. I mean, we were just talking a couple of months ago how he hit Colby Covington with a boomerang. Like, that doesn't get any more pro wrestling than that. And he's a guy that doesn't seem ever to be at a loss of words. So I think he definitely has the persona, but he's an old dude. And I don't know, you know, pro wrestling, people can be very quote-unquote old in pro wrestling who have done it a while, but there's not a great track record of people who would come in their mid-40s into pro wrestling and have a great career, just the toll that it takes for training. But I do think it's an interesting thing to explore, and how many guys on the back end of their careers go to pro wrestling in this manner. It's something to definitely follow. We've always been told that, oh, well, a lot of these heavyweights specifically in another era would have gone into pro wrestling, but being that the MMA avenue is there, that's the way they went. I am curious if that tide turns where the guys at the end of their careers, you know, like a Boss Rutten even did pro wrestling at the end of his career. So just an interesting thing to keep your eye on. Something to spice up this Fight Night card, which is a little uninspiring. In the co-main event, though.
And the other thing about that, too.
Go ahead.
Real quick, the other thing, too, is, you know, that now, you know, now that, you know, Shayna Baszler is in the WWE and obviously Ronda's in, and there's, you know, I believe there's two other women at least in down at the Performance Center. Like, there, it's becoming a bit of a trend to see the WWE, maybe not even fighters looking to get into the WWE, but WWE looking at the pool of fighters as potential prospects. So I think for the first time, you're seeing actually the WWE as a company and the pro wrestling business as a company look to MMA fighters as a source of potential, which could be something to see, look at here. We could be talking 2-3 years down the road where there's even more of an influx of fight talent in the WWE system.
And I'll ask you this about that. Are you interested in going back to a world the way it may have been like in the late 90s and early 2000s, where if you're a professional fighter, you learn a lot about pro wrestling and the culture of pro wrestling and even training it a little bit because you don't know where your career path is going to take you? Is that something you think fighters should invest in early in their training in MMA?
I mean, yeah, I think if you're a fighter and you want to, and more so than just being a well-rounded fighter, but if you want to be a well-rounded business person in those businesses, I think you've got to kind of know both so you can, you know, keep yourself educated on what each of those businesses are like. And to me, having that knowledge will get you a long way. And if you are in a position where you are being recruited by somebody like WWE and you already have that base, it's only going to help you. So absolutely, I think if you're a fighter and you're looking long term and you're kind of planning out what you want your career trajectory to look like, why wouldn't you do that?
And one last note on this, I'll say just as a general broad statement on the situation, unless you're a George St. Pierre who really was an anomaly in mixed martial arts, all the draws in MMA traditionally have had a very pro wrestling lean to them. I mean, I even talk about Fabricio Verdum, who I don't think will be a great draw in pro wrestling, but there's a very pro wrestling side to him. Conor McGregor, extremely pro wrestling. Ronda Rousey, who's now transitioned into pro wrestling. Obviously, Brock Lesnar's a little bit different of the story, but it's Tito Ortiz, I think, maybe is the perfect example of someone who used tactics from pro wrestling in a pro wrestling presentation, and the UFC itself has, you know, infamously used the business model of the WWE to grow their business in the 2000s. So, and we'll talk about this on a few different subjects later on, but these are two entities that are always going to be linked, and it's just interesting how now the floodgates are open, the walls are down between the two, and now it's a now it's a free conversation. Zach, before we move on to our first break, let's quickly give some predictions for the co-main event of this card. You have a little bit of some fading light heavyweights, and here's Jimmy Manoa takes on Jan Błachowicz. Who you got in this one?
I'm taking Manoa. I think he's just overall, even though, I mean, look, both guys aren't you know, sizzling by any means, but I think just looking at how he fights and how his strategy going into different fights, he seems to be somebody that I look at that's going to be more prepared going into this one and just going to be able to exert his will over his opponent better. So I'm thinking him. I actually think it's going to be a pretty decisive victory. So I'm not going to say knockout, but I'm going to say unanimous decision in the end.
Right. And Manoa, I said fading fight, light heavyweights, but that's kind of a relative term because it is light heavyweight where the line is always so short. And he seemed to be the guy that was penciled in until he ran into Volkan Ozdemir, and Ozdemir really took his spot. Right. You know, it was kind of between Manoa and Anderson and that group of the mid-tier light heavyweight. So he could very easily get back on track over here. All right, Zach, that is that's what's going on this weekend. I got to ask you, last weekend, did you enjoy the break from MMA?
You know what? I love MMA and I love the UFC and I love watching fights, but it is good to have that little break. Austin Smith, the Hardcore Fonder. And now, you know, I'm on a card that overall maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I wouldn't have been excited for. This upcoming weekend, I am excited to sit down Saturday night and have a good time and watch him. So for that reason, yes, it was a nice break. It was needed, but I'm ready to go this weekend, though.
Yeah, I enjoyed the weekend off either. I actually got away from my house for the weekend, which was really fun. But when I got away, I didn't want to pay, full price for liquor at the hotel bar. So I went to a close by liquor store of the hotel, like any frugal man would do. And this was a great liquor store. Normally, when I talk about these things on the air, I always make fun of, the gas station attendant that doesn't know what he's doing. The people at this place knew what they were doing. There was a lot of good stuff. But as I'm walking out, my wife tells me, "Man, all that wine looks good, but I have no idea what to order." And just like that, a light bulb like went off in my head. And I said, "Boy, do I have something to tell you about." Now, I haven't told her about it, so she's going to have to listen to what I'm about to tell you, and that's how she's going to know what I was about to talk about. And what I'm about to talk about is Wink. That's Wink. Now, what Wink does, it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines that are matched just to your taste, and they're personalized just for you. They send it right to your door, and they start at just $13 a bottle. See, and this weekend, we were in a little bit of a different city, so even if we found a wine we liked, we can't keep traveling every weekend to go get that bottle of wine, or every month, I should say. But with Wink, it would just come right to our door. I mean, there's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine. It's the best day of your month. This Saturday might be the best day of our month. This fight card ends up being better than we think it is, but the Wink day could be that as well. All you got to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. I mean, it's questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? Then what Wink will do, they'll send you wines that are curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized each one of your monthly selections become. So the more they get to know you, the better they'll be able to fit a wine just to your taste. Each month, there's a bunch of delicious new wines, and there's no membership fees. You can skip at any time, and you can cancel at any time. Shipping is absolutely covered, and if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you love, no questions asked. No buyer's remorse here. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. Okay, Zach, let's go to a break, and on the other side, let's take a phone call or two, and we'll discuss some of the going-ons in MMA.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, "Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you."
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. Someone tells them like, "All right, now it's your turn, go out there," right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
All right. Now, if you want to get in with us, talk to us, add something to the conversation, just give us a call. 515-605-9345. That's the beauty of us being back live. And the downside of not being live is we don't get to hear from our callers that we're used to talking to every week. And, of course, I think our one of our two Hall of Fame callers, I'll call them, are the best friends of the show. First up will be Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, what do you got for us today?
My first question for you is on a fighter named Nick Newell that fought over the weekend and picked up a pretty impressive victory. You ever see him getting signed by the UFC?
Yeah, Ryan, that's a great question, and we were planning on talking about that further down in the show. We'll talk about it right now. Zach, what do you think about Noel? Is he UFC bound for sure?
You know, it's an interesting situation, and I'm trying to weigh the things that Dana White has said and what I think he deserves at this point. And to me, just based on his body of work, just based on that and that alone, I think he does deserve a run in the UFC. I mean, there are people that have debuted in the UFC with worse records than him. And I think at this point he's built up enough of a resume and enough of a following where it's time to look at him for consideration. So I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say yes, at some point that does get done. I'm not sure it'll be this year, but I will go on record. I'm going to say yes, I think he will be in the UFC at some point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's coming in as well. He's got a good enough resume. And if anything, the bar has been much lower recently on what it means to be a UFC fighter.
Right.
Because they have so much inventory to fill out that they need fighters, and they need fighters that are marketable. And look, the UFC, less than any other time in its history, possibly, is not a meritocracy at all anymore. If you can be marketed and if you can sell fights, they're going to pick you up and they're going to promote you. So there's really not a reason to do that. The only downside, as someone pointed out, will it look bad if he gets beat very bad and you have a guy with one arm getting beat by an able-bodied individual? The optics of that obviously wouldn't be well, but I think the UFC could weather that storm. I think they're so far removed from what the perception of MMA was at one point that they could survive this, and the upside to the positive PR that they would get out of this. And I say positive PR, this guy's not a charity case. The guy can definitely fight, but they would reap some of those benefits. So I definitely think it's going to happen. I think it definitely should happen. What else you got for us, Ryan?
My second question is a little bit related to what I asked, but not necessarily. You ever see a fighter with, like, one leg ever fighting, or has that already been done, or is that just too big of a handicap for mixed martial arts?
I believe that.
And Zach Gowen did it in wrestling.
Yeah, I thought of Zach Gowen as soon as you said that. I believe that's happened a few times. YouTube has, on the local scene, I'm trying to think of, I've seen a one-legged fighter. I've seen a no-legged fighter before. I know that for sure. I've seen on YouTube. Zach, do you know any specific examples? But you've seen that before, haven't you?
Yeah, I've seen it. I mean, I can't think of examples name-wise off the top of my head. But, you know, I mean, to me, just on this subject in general, I mean, it's certainly an interesting subject. But, you know, I'm of the school of thought, like, that, you know, look, if there's a one legged fighter out there who has beat viable opponents and has moved up the food chain in the fight game just like anybody else with two legs or three arms or whatever the case is, you know, you're as good as your resume. And then look, and if you're 14-1 and you have, you know, one arm, I mean, look, there's 14 to 15 fights that can be looked at where, hey, I don't think the UFC has to worry too much about that visual, because this particular athlete or that particular athlete, whoever it is, has been in numerous situations where he knows what he's doing, and he knows the risk involved in doing it. So to me, I guess I don't really get the argument against this, just because you wouldn't make it for any other fighter. So to me, if you can pass the test and that test is good competition, you should be able to go where you want to go and go to a company or companies that will have you, regardless of how many legs you have.
Matthew Betzold is the infamous one-legged fighter, and there's a lot about him. We're all thinking of on the tip of our tongues. It's through in the Google machine there. And to Zach's point, yeah, if the guy can fight, then bring him in. I would think it would be a more difficult handicap. I think that, to your original question, Ryan, having no legs, I think, would be very difficult, because every fight does start standing up, so that's an advantage, the dynamic in the fight.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, there's guys, and I'm not trying to say this to be comical, but a guy like John Dotson only uses one hand in all of his fights anyway, you know. So I think there's a, you don't use your arms as a base to stand on the way you do your legs. So I can see why that would be a little bit more of a severe handicap. What else you got for us, Ryan?
Yeah, other question is sort of related to handicaps. Do you ever see a fighter with a mask fighting in either UFC or one of the top other promotions in the United States? I know, like, Alberto Del Rio has done it, like, overseas, and I think even Jushin Thunder Liger has done it. I haven't seen any, like, real Americans try to do it yet.
I don't think a commission would allow it, to be perfectly honest with you. I've seen the Del Rio fight, the infamous one where he gets tapped out in, like, a minute. But he's fighting with the lucha mask on, which looks funny. And I think did Gabby Garcia fight somebody with a mask on like a year and a half ago in Ryzen? I think that sounds right, but I don't know if it happened.
Yeah.
Do you think if that would ever be sanctioned in like mainstream American MMA?
No, I don't think so. And I think it's for two reasons. One, I mean, you have to be careful about whether it gives the fighter an advantage or if it's just too dangerous and it gives the fighter a major disadvantage. So because of that reason, it's too hard to control. It's too hard to, if you're in the fight and you get punched and the mask moves and you can't see, like, you know, there's so many variables that go into something like that I don't think any commission would allow that to take place. I'm with you on that one, Robert.
Ryan, call us again next week. Hopefully we'll be on air like normal.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan drops off at 515-605-9345. I was thinking about it as we were answering the question, though. There are some interesting masks in the history of pro wrestling that would make great in MMA. I mean, like, imagine someone coming with a cane mask into MMA or Mantar or one of those like Juventud Guerrero masks that had the horns on it. That would be an amazing sight. It's not going to happen, but that'd be great.
Like WrestleMania 22, like Rey Mysterio's mask was just like, I think like to his, or at least his mask for his entrance was like down to his knees.
is that the one when he came in with POD and he had like the Aztec headdress?
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be awesome. All right, let's get to our next call, and I think this is the other half of our caller Hall of Fame. Skype, you're on the air. What's your name and location?
Hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia.
Valentin, how was your trip to Norway?
What's up, Valentin? Yeah, it was great. And one of my observations, one of the bars in Moscow airport, instead of some sports network or news network, they just show pride fights in a bar in an airport.
Wow.
That would be like the best way to pass time in an airport, sitting there with an adult beverage watching old school pride fights. That's awesome. Did you enjoy the fights, Valentin?
Yeah. And the fight that I catch was Mirko Krokop versus Fedor. So now Mirko Krokop is coming back. And my question for today, what do you think about Mirko Krokop fighting in Bellator, even though he basically didn't serve his 2-year suspension?
Yeah, Valentin, I've been thinking about that a lot. That sets a really weird precedent for American MMA because, you know, Scott Coker has said, well, USADA is a global organization technically and could have gone after him in his fights in Ryzen and chose not to, I guess because they weren't being sanctioned by an American promotion. So therefore, why should he be held to that standard? Bellator doesn't have the relationship with USADA the way that the UFC does. Bellator just has to answer to the local athletic commissions, whereas the UFC has an additional anti-doping body with USADA and WADA on top of the athletic commissions. You know, so the idea is that a USADA suspension isn't a state suspension, so another state isn't as obligated to honor it the way John Jones, who was suspended in California, and that essentially gets him suspended for the rest throughout the rest of the United States. And you would think the rest of the world by a major sanctioning promotion, but this definitely sets a really, really weird precedent. And I think I can understand where Scott Coker is coming from, but it feels like dirty pool in some ways to me that he's been able to get away with this. And now that we see this, you would think, well, can a guy like a John Jones somehow circumvent the system? And more so than John Jones, another guy to consider would be a guy like a Brock Lesnar, who probably isn't contractually tied to the UFC the way a John Jones is. Is that a way to get around the system? I hadn't really considered it that much. I just considered someone going to Ryzen, you know, to get away from the authorities. I never thought of them using that as a loophole to fight once again in America. What do you think about that, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, it is a gray area. And I don't know. I don't think they're not breaking any rules. Let's put it that way. They're not breaking any concrete rules. But to me, I just get the feeling that it's just another kind of Bellator-like move that makes them seem a little more second rate than I think they want to be perceived as. And that's what bugs me about it. So it's not so much that they're doing it. They can. They're allowed. It's fine. Whatever. But I just don't think it paints them in the right light.
No, it doesn't. And it like you said, I think they've already have a bad reputation with this one that I think they've done a good job of working to shed in some ways recently. But
yeah.
They do always revert back to this, like what happened with Kibo Slice and Dada 5000. The company could have in all likelihood shut down over that if you think about what the consequences could have been there.
Right.
And then you do have a fighter like a Chael Sonnen who obviously enjoys fighting in a organization that doesn't have the USADA cloud hanging over it. But then like you said, they're not breaking any rules. Like they're not actually doing anything wrong. It to me this is less about what Bellator is doing and more about what can be done with other fighters. And I said earlier, you're fighting in America. The USC 2, excuse me, the Bellator 200 card is going to be in London. It's not in America, but generally, an entity like USADA will still have some influence over what the UFC does, no matter what country they're in. What else you got for us, Valentin?
That's all I got for the day.
All right, Valentin, it was good talking to you again. Sorry we couldn't talk to you the last couple of weeks. Enjoy your day, man.
Thank you.
See you, man.
All right. Watching Pride at an airport waiting area, that just sounds
Boy,
great.
That's great.
Yeah. I was thinking about people this week who get to watch, like, you know, NCAA tournament games in an airport, and at least that's a good way to pass the time. But, you know, watching Pride would have been a much better way to do that. All right, let's take one more call before the
100%.
Break. 818, what's your name and location?
Hey, guys, it's Rick from Alaska. How are you doing today?
Hey, Rick, what's going on, man?
What's up, Rick?
Hey, Zach. Hey, Robert, I was just thinking about what you guys were saying earlier about Nick Newell. I watched his fight over the past weekend, and I watched a lot of his fights. I actually got to meet him in Vegas right at the beginning of his World Series of Fighting career. And so it's not like meeting someone automatically makes you personally invested, but I feel a little bit invested in his watching his career develop. That being said, I know he wants to go to the UFC, and I know that I agree with everything you guys say, how like UFC can withstand any sort of blowback they might get from a bad fight or a beat down. But they can also rise to the, you know, they can promote him and do well if he starts winning a lot. I do still have that initial 2014 Justin Gaethje fight still stuck in my mind, though, every time I see him. And I know it's been a while, but I think part of the reason it stuck with me so much is that was also the same weekend BJ Penn had his third fight with Frankie Edgar, the one where BJ Penn just stood straight up and didn't move his chin at all, and Frankie Edgar destroyed him in three rounds. And so that was like on a Saturday. And I think the Gaethje fight was on a Friday. And I remember talking to my MMA friends, and we just felt guilty to be fans during that weekend because you saw BJ Penn get completely beat down. And then Nick Newell was just bloody. And I feel even Gaethje felt uncomfortable after round one in that fight. So I just really hope that doesn't happen again, where he strings a couple wins together, then they put him up against, say, Eddie Alvarez, and it's just another massacre.
Yeah, no, that is a very big downside that we didn't really discuss earlier. And just because there's nothing wrong with the UFC putting him in that position, and he's an adult that's making this decision, and a commission sanctions it, you do have to ask the question, is that something I want to watch? I mean, Rick, last week we joked about not having a conscience when we watch MMA, but I think that there is a certain line we can draw there where we'd be like, if the guy gets beat bad, is that something you want to see and you'll feel good about seeing for your entertainment dollar after the fact? I think that has to be a consideration. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah. Same thing. I mean, it's a tough situation because I'm with you. I mean, I think that a lot when I watch these fights, I'm thinking to myself like, man, am I a bad person for getting excited about this particular sport? And I think, you know, you just have to, I try to just separate it from, you know, like, yes, it's sometimes it can be really tough to watch. That is the nature of the beast, but I don't want, like, personally, if it's me, yeah, maybe I don't really want to watch, the Gaethje fight over again, but I certainly wouldn't want to, my personal opinion on that, to keep somebody from striving to achieve what they want to achieve if that's a UFC contract. So I don't know. I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, and I understand that, but I think it's a issue with a lot of sides to the coin.
Would you be interested in the fight if it happened, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they should test the water and everything, but I guess we're lucky that Nick Newell is in the lighter weight class. Could you imagine him if he was a heavyweight and he was stringing together some victories against some tomato cans, and then they set him up with a Francis or an Alex Overeem or something like that, where at least in this he can stay competitive, he can get the guys down, and he does it with relative ease. I think at some point, I mean, the UFC's got CM Punk fighting again. They'll throw anyone in there, so Nikita will actually can fight. So I'm interested to see. I just don't like, I joke about having no conscience, you know, like you said, we did. And for the most part, that's true. I really don't when it comes to watching these fights, even if they're really lopsided. I mean, even the Gaethje Penfrey one bothered me that much. It was a sandwich with that other fight. But that being said, Nick Newell getting beat down is the only time I've really felt uncomfortable watching a fight. Like, truly, even after someone like Overeem's arm breaking and stuff like that, I was like, just part of the game, you know, but I don't know. There's something about it. And I think I, as a fan, don't like that mirror turned around in my own direction, you know, because I justify this sport to a lot of people who think that it's a little too barbaric. And I'm like, no, it's a sport. But if we're watching a fight night, I bring some casual fans over and that fight's on the prelims or one of the first fights of the main card and it's another beatdown, it's going to be hard to bring the fans back. But yeah, it's a tough one. Anyways, but that's it for me. Thanks, guys. To be continued.
All right, Rick. We'll talk to you soon, man. Take it easy.
Thanks, Rick. See ya.
All right. Before we go to break, Zach, let's talk about the CM Punk thing real quick. He did tweet out today indicating that he's going to be on the card in Chicago. Are you excited, Zach?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm excited just, you know, look, because I live here and I'm a CM Punk fan. So I'm excited for what that will mean for the event that's going to be here in my city that I'm going to hopefully get tickets to and go to. And that's kind of where, that's where the excitement stops. I don't see him being competitive. I certainly don't see him winning the fight, but from just a personal standpoint that, yeah, I think I am excited. It's tough to analyze why, but I am. How's that for like pristine analysis, Robert?
Oh, that's great. I mean, that's why you get paid the big bucks around here. I mean, that's why you had to cut off the show on me last week, is because you weren't going to be able to provide that expert insight. I'm with you though on that. I want to see CM Punk just because I like CM Punk. Like, that's what it comes down to more than anything. I don't really want to see him fight. Like, I could just see here cult the personality, have him come out. I do, you know, everyone knows I have an affection for the heat that MMA pro wrestling crossover seems to draw out of people, and he's the master at that. So I guess one more question before we go to break. What will you be more excited for? Going to watch CM Punk at the UFC in Chicago, or going to watch CM Punk at the All In show and wherever that is in Illinois? I'm not sure.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, yes. If I could pick, I would much rather watch CM Punk wrestle. I think, you know, majority of us, not just me, but wrestling fans and MMA fans alike would answer that question that way. So, yes, I'm more convinced that he's going to be at this All-In show every day now. But certainly would rather see him in a wrestling ring. But that said, hearing cult of personality and all the hype that'll go into it, there's something to be said for just going to these fights and having a good time. That's what he'll bring to the table for me. I'm sure he's going to get dusted off in
2-3 minutes tops, but that's the world he lives in now. So,
all right, Zach, let's go to a commercial break, and on the other side of it, let's look at how UFC 222 did in the prelims on FS1, and then we'll talk about John Anik's claim that Nate Diaz could be a top five draw in the UFC without Conor McGregor.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, Zach Hadorn and Robert Vallejos back at you talking MMA and pro wrestling on MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. I want to reiterate the ways to get a hold of us aside from the phones, as we heard the callers getting with some good opinions and questions. The last segment, you can also write to us, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Or hit us up on Twitter, @MMATorch. Very simple, @MMATORCH. Okay, Zach, let's talk about some broader point stuff that came up during the week. John Anik, who is, I guess you would say he's the voice of the UFC at this point. He's you know, almost fully taken over from Mike Goldberg. I guess Joe Rogan maybe has that mantle, but he seems to be a play-by-play guy or commentator that seems to be relatively well-respected. In the wake of Brian Stann leaving, Anik really has risen to the top of his game, and he gave an interview to MMA Junkie where he expressed his opinion that at this point, Nate Diaz can be a top five draw on his own without Conor McGregor. Now, that's very interesting because I think everybody agrees right now that Nate Diaz is a draw. How big of a draw can he be, and can he do it without Conor McGregor? It's an unknowable question. Nate Diaz has never main evented a pay-per-view in his life, so we don't know, can he sell? Obviously, he sold with Conor McGregor. Those two guys are two different sides of the same coin, though, and they work very well together. And I do think the Diaz brothers, both of them, profile was raised by the McGregor fights. Top five draw, I guess in this depleted landscape, I would agree with John Anik, but the further away we get from August of 2016, I think we're going to start to forget what Diaz brought in those fights, not just with the unexpected submission of Conor McGregor, but also that great fight they had at UFC 202. So I'm not going to say he's a top five draw automatically, perhaps in this depressed landscape. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I think in the landscape right now, as it stands today, I think it's hard to argue that Diaz wouldn't be a top five draw, just because nobody is really drawing oodles and oodles of fans to the product right now if your name is not Brock Lesnar or Conor McGregor, and formerly before that, Ronda Rousey. So, you know, there's a huge, pretty large drop off from those guys to other quote unquote top draws in the company right now. And I think the fact that Nate's been gone for so long has added some shine to him as a fighter, and to the fact that people want to see him fight again. I think in the McGregor fights, he really became a very big star. And Conor McGregor, you know, he likes to talk about, you know, making guys and guys to get on their knees for him because he's making them a lot of money and making them into big stars. But he really did that with Nate Diaz. I mean, Nate Diaz, I think, is seen now in a totally different light than he was going into those fights. And because of that intrigue alone, I think he would be a top five draw right now. That said, like you said, as we get further and further away from that last McGregor fight, at some point that interest and intrigue is going to start tailing off. At some point, people are going to say, ah, forget it. Like, he's not coming back. He's 2 years older now anyway. And, you know, I just don't care about this guy anymore. I think I think we're getting closer and closer to that reaction than we are to people wanting to see him. So he needs to be really, really careful here. I think he's at the tail end of that sweet spot where him coming back to the UFC is going to mean big money, and he needs to be careful from a business point of view to not go past that. And I think he's treading water right now when it comes to that. But I think absolutely, in a world where there is no Conor McGregor, in a world where there is no Ronda Rousey, in a world where Brock Lesnar is gone and Jon Jones is suspended, clearly Nate Diaz is a top five draw, if not a top draw today in the UFC.
I agree with everything you just said, but I would ask, is anything you said actually going to be relevant? And what I mean by that is he going to come back unless it's against Conor McGregor? Do you believe he's going to come back and fight against anybody else in the entire world?
I think, yes, I think he will. I think, I think the UFC is starved for talent. They're starved for top draws, and he is a guy that they have. He's not an ace up their sleeve, but he's a very high face card that they can play as long as they pay him the correct amount of money. And I think at some point, I just believe at some point it comes down to the money. And at some point, UFC and Dana White is going to want to make it. They're going to want to cash in the Nate Diaz chip, and Nate will be ready to go when that time comes. Because I think he understands that he can't let this linger on, because the longer he does, the smaller and smaller his paycheck's going to be. So at some point, I just am of the thought that at some point money talks and both sides will say, hey, okay, it's time to come back into this thing. Whether that is for the McGregor fight or something else, I think it will happen.
It is one last note I'll put on this. It's interesting with Diaz. Is he the only one of the top draws that has limited options outside of the UFC when you think about it? Because so many of these other people have other careers that they've cultivated as a result of being in the UFC. We're seeing that now with Ronda Rousey. You've seen a boxing career come up with Conor McGregor. Now, Nate Diaz is probably a better boxer than Conor McGregor, but I don't know if he has interest in an actual boxing career. Nate Diaz, for better or worse, was put on this earth to be a professional MMA fighter. That is his unique skill set, and he's perfectly cut out to do that, and not a lot else. So I think that is a place where there couldn't be some leverage on the UFC side, but the Diaz brothers are not stupid. I do think he will draw. I just don't know what a draw is anymore, to be quite frank with you. People say Cyborg is a draw.
Right.
Her fights, yeah, they do well, but they're nothing compared to what we saw even before the huge pay-per-view boom of McGregor and Rousey. None of these people are even doing GSP type of numbers. So yes, I think he will be the draw, but again, what is a draw? Now, and that's an interesting segue into our next topic, where we have some preliminary numbers out on the UFC 222 undercard, which aired on FS1 2 weeks ago, and it was it even drew with us on this show, because it was one of the few times that we talked about a prelim fight on this show, and that of course was the debut of Mackenzie Dern. And apparently it did very well. Dave Meltzer had an item up on MMAfighting.com where he noted that the numbers were very similar on Fox Sports 1 to what they did at UFC 220, which is interesting because UFC 220, by comparison, was a very attractive pay-per-view card. You had Stipe Miocic defending against Francis Ngannou, Daniel Cormier defending against Volkan Oezdemir. Those are big-time fights. And you usually, according to Meltzer's analysis, the prelim cards are an indicator of how well the pay-per-view does. It does not seem to be the case here. Meltzer doesn't project that UFC 222 did well on pay-per-view, but that the card itself did well on FS1. And he also noted that the streaming numbers, which obviously is a relatively new metric that they're tracking, were comparable to UFC 217, which was the most noteworthy UFC card, you know, within maybe over the last year, depending on how you look at UFC 214. So if you're the UFC, do you take this as a big win? The fact that Mackenzie Dern proved, at least for her debut, she was absolutely a draw?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would. I definitely would, if for no other reason that you want to be out there selling victories. And look, I it's got to be something where the UFC is going, man, I wish you just looked a little bit better in that fight, because I know she won the fight and that's good, but I don't think she looked she didn't look as dominant as I thought she was going to look in the win. And I think a dominant performance could have enhanced the star power a little bit. But look, it's clear that people tuned in to watch her. She did win, and that's a start of something. So if I'm UFC, yeah, I do. I start lining up opponents for her and see what she can do with them. Now, again, she's got to hold up her end of the bargain and win. But yeah, clearly people tuned in to watch her, and that's a good thing.
And I don't have the metrics on this, but I would guess she was drawing the base back in. I think the UFC audience is so depleted on a regular basis that the core of the UFC audience is much less significant than it was a year and a half or 2 years ago. Again, we're talking about pay-per-views that sell 300,000 buys as being successful pay-per-views in this day and age, and that used to be, you know, very low benchmark. I think the base is now around the 100,000 mark on pay-per-view, and I would say it's probably the same with television viewing, as those ratings have been going down much like everything else on television, so there is a relativity to that. But I would think Mackenzie Dern probably has got no mainstream attention. That's people who follow MMA, who follow the MMA websites, who, you know, on most Saturdays would have something better to do other than watch the prelims of an underwhelming pay-per-view card, but they tuned in for this. So I do think that is a good indication. But like you said, you have to make the concession that she didn't look great in that fight. So there are going to be some people that saw that and were turned off and maybe said, okay, I don't want to believe the hype. I do think that they need to be careful with pushing her. And we said this, you know, 2 weeks ago when we analyzed the card, but it really is the case. If you push her too fast, then she becomes Paige VanZant, someone who still is very popular and is a great athlete,
right.
But then they have the stain that the UFC pushed them too hard or too quick. It's hard to break free of that stigma. I mean, just ask our good friend Roman Reigns how hard it is to break free from the stigma that the company you work for wanted you to get to the top too quick. So I do think they're off to a good start with her, but patience will be key. And that's not something that Dana White is exactly known for. His prudence and mild manneredness isn't why we love/hate Dana White, so to say. All right, Zach, let's go to another break. And on the other side, we're going to get into some MMA and pro wrestling topics. We're going to talk about the TV deal a little bit and analyze an article that a mainstream-ish website wrote and see if we disagree to what this writer said.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
We always want our audience to participate in the show as any way possible. I've given you the phone number tonight, I've given you the email address, I've given you the Twitter account, but there are ways even beyond that to participate in the show. If you see anything on the internet that fits into the specific realm of our show, the crossroads between MMA and pro wrestling, send it our way. Make us aware of it. You know, me and Zach are these lazy trolls that sit on the internet all day, but we don't see everything. I mean, there's something that I'm sure passes our purview once in a while. Not often, of course, but every once in a while. Also, if you see anything on Twitter specifically that has an MMA fan or an MMA journalist just not enjoying the pro wrestling that's being injected into their MMA, please send that along, because we'd like to do a segment called Pro Wrestling Makes MMA Guy Mad. And it's dried up a little bit recently because I think people are just okay with Ronda Rousey being in pro wrestling, or else they don't care as much as they did 2 or 3 weeks ago. But I did have something come in that was brought to my attention a little, came in while we were recording the show last week, but I think we should do it. Now, Jim Edwards, who is a journalist for multiple MMA media outlets, seems to be a pretty decent reporter, does a lot of reporting on Bellator and smaller MMA organizations. So he's a guy that seemingly knows his stuff. But he sent this tweet out, and this tweet was a reaction to what we talked about earlier of Fabricio Werdum expressing his interest in participating in professional wrestling at some point in his life. And so he quoted the article that MMA Fighting put up, and he said, quote, "People don't understand that MMA's gradual and ever-increasing proximity to WWE isn't a good thing. They are two very different entities, and it needs to stay that way," unquote. Zach, what do you think about that statement from an MMA media member?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I saw that statement, and then I was able to sit back and watch him take all the backlash from it. And I think the backlash is warranted. I mean, look, if you go back and you look at the history of MMA and the history of just the fight game in general and the history of pro wrestling, like, they – sure, yes, they're different things. I mean, one is a predetermined, quote-unquote, performance, and the other is actual sport. And yes, that's different, but in terms of promotion and marketing and running the business and becoming a big star and having the business feature big stars and promote big stars, like, MMA and pro wrestling are more alike than anything in that regard. They're so closely mirrored in how both organizations go to market that you can't, in an educated way, you can't go out there and tweet that kind of thing, because it just shows that you're a little bit, you're not truly in touch with. I don't think he actually believes what he said, and I like to think that if he could go back in time, he wouldn't have tweeted that out, because it really is. It is ridiculous in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and to your point, MMA and pro wrestling are much closer than, like, the NFL and the NBA, if you ask me. I mean, they have very similar business models.
Totally.
The NFL, you know, is a one-day-a-week league, in theory, where the NBA does multiple days a week, and, you know, the home markets are set up differently in what they're trying to market. MMA and pro wrestling, especially WWE and UFC, are set up identical to each other. So that really is, you know, outside from the predetermined nature, that is the core difference, and it's not really a major one. MMA is very predetermined in a lot of ways as well. There's a lot of stuff that they set up, you know, to happen in MMA. It doesn't always work out for them, but there is a lot of predetermined outcomes in MMA. It's just not fixed. Yeah, I was struck too. I saw the tweet earlier in the week, didn't think much of it, and then to go revisit it, this poor guy got hammered in the reply section.
Yeah, he got just.
I mean, I when I pulled it up today to put it on the show, I mean, there was a guy that days later kept hammering this guy, and people who I assume the guy has blocked, because there was other MMA journalists who were screenshotting this tweet and giving their own opinion on it. But we'll read a couple of those, and we're not trying to pile on this guy. Let me say, it's not like this guy is not. I don't think he's necessarily trying to be a troll, like generally people are in this segment. I just think he didn't realize what he was saying when he said it, and he thought he was making this grandiose statement of something of grave importance, and he completely missed the mark. Probably the most infamous person to reply to him is none other than one Shayna Baszler, who simply said, very short and sweet, "Japan and the entire history of both sports disagree with you completely." What a way for someone like Shayna Baszler to just come at you and just shut you down immediately. But of course, you know, Shayna Baszler has an interest. She was a former, you know, MMA fighter who's transitioned very well into the world of pro wrestling. But let's take somebody from the UFC's bubble. That would be Ant Evans. Ant Evans does a lot of work with UFC Fight Pass. He's kind of the point man on all that. And here's what he replied. "Oh dear, you just opened yourself up to a blizzard of McNew batons, Jim. Enjoy your time away from Twitter. I'm sure it'll calm down in a week or two." And then another MMA journalist kind of voiced his support for him, and he didn't. This was interesting. He said the other MMA journalist agree. "I stay away from those three letters that start with a W. It's like saying Voldemort," which I thought was just awesome. And then another reply from Ant Evans. "It's not that Jim mocked anyone. As much as he seemed to indicate, he knows little of the history of MMA. ... Poor guy is getting murdered." So I thought that was great that even somebody who works for and with the UFC kind of said, dude, you are way off base. So that really – sometimes these things, you know, you put something out in the Twitter sphere and you think it's probably a very innocuous thing, or maybe you want it to go viral. But this poor guy got hammered his replies. I have sympathy for his mentions. But that actually gives us a good segue into what we're going to talk about next. Last week – we talked a little bit about the idea that Fox really seems to be making a play for the WWE's television rights, which the negotiations are set to begin here in a couple of weeks. They can't officially negotiate yet, but you had a bunch of Fox executives at a SmackDown event in California. So the momentum definitely seems to be headed that way. Whether or not it actually comes to fruition remains to be seen. But I ran across an interesting article this week on the subject, and it was from OutkickTheCoverage.com, Jason Martin. Before we get into this, I want to give my stipulation or my my disclosure on this. I, for the most part, I loathe Outkick the Coverage, and specifically their head editor, Clay Travis. I just believe it's a lazy way of performing analysis when you boil everything down to a culture war of us versus them. It's very easy to make anything into that, and that becomes very lazy analysis, and it becomes a crutch for you to write these nonsensical pieces that have some base in reality and take on a whole life of their own. Before we talk about this, do you have any opinion on Outkick the Coverage, Zach, or are you pretty agnostic on the whole front?
I'm pretty agnostic, but I know what you're saying, and I do agree with it. I mean, they habitually walk that fine line that you question some of their credibility, and they need to be careful with that.
And with that said, this guy Jason Martin doesn't seem to fall completely in line with that. He has some decent articles up on the site and some good stuff. And the site itself, let me say too, does have some interesting stuff. They got some interesting gambling articles, so they're not a waste, but they definitely do color in those gray areas, like you were saying, Zach. And just for note, this guy Jason Martin also has worked in independent pro wrestling in the past and has written about pro wrestling for a long time. So this isn't some guy who works at ESPN or Sports Illustrated who gets assigned to the wrestling beat and has no idea what he's talking about. This guy knows what he's talking about-ish, but I believe he's off a little bit in his analysis, and I wanted to discuss that just to get a gauge of what the mainstream fan is getting in their coverage of this story. Now, the main thesis that this guy had of his piece was that for Fox, it shouldn't be a question of who to take between the WWE and the UFC. Once again, as we mentioned last week, the two are not going to coexist. If Fox gets the WWE, they're going to cease their relationship with the UFC. And the main argument from this guy was that there's too much money involved in making stars to leave the outcome up to chance. Without going into the rest of the article, what do you think about that, Zach?
Well, do I agree with that sentence? Sure, I think there's something to be said for that sentence in and of itself. But the premise of that within the confines of that thesis is just it's incorrect, because he's really comparing apples and oranges there, because it's not a matter of that when I look at this situation. It's a matter of, do you want a TV show as part of your business, or do you want a sport? And that's where I disagree with him on quite a few things, because he blends those two entities together as one, and I don't think you can do that. And that's my main issue with the piece in general.
Yeah, and if you take it away from the combat sports realm, that argument completely falls apart, because the NBA, although some would argue otherwise, is not predetermined. LeBron James and Kevin Durant are massive stars, bigger stars than probably anybody in the combat sports realm. Tom Brady is a massive star. Clayton Kershaw is a, not a massive star, but a huge star. There are stars in the world of legitimate sports. It's not like they can't be made, and their win-loss record isn't so directly tied to that. That's another thing here in this article that I think misses the mark.
Totally.
The people who lose are still major stars. I just talked about LeBron James. The guy loses in the finals like every year, and he's still one of the biggest celebrities in the world. Okay, and on that thing of winning.
Well, yeah, on that note, you don't have these sports. You know, look, there are times in the NBA and in the NFL or Major League Baseball, especially, when you have teams that aren't filled with stars that are winning things. And yeah, sometimes they win championships and don't draw as well. That happens in sports. And I think that's where this article misses the boat a little bit. You know, you could have the 2005 Chicago White Sox who don't, good team. They win the World Series. Nobody watched it in the grand scheme of things, but it still happened. And it doesn't mean that Major League Baseball is worth less than WWE.
Right. And he made the argument that we'd like the upset, but then what happens after the upset isn't always so good. And there's some truth to that, but his example, again, kind of falls flat. This is the direct quote from the article. Buster Douglas was never known for anything else. And Holm, he's referred to Holly Holm, famously fell off a proverbial cliff when Misha Tate beat her. Okay, here's where he's wrong. On a few, Buster Douglas, I'll grant him that, but Buster Douglas was actually kind of at the end of his career anyway, so he just didn't have much of a career, and that's what he became known for. Holly Holm in 10 years will only be known for knocking out Ronda Rousey. That is correct. However, Holly Holm has won one fight since then and has main evented on nearly every show she's been on since then. She was made a star out of that, and they've used that stardom to their advantage. Did she become Ronda Rousey? Did she replace Ronda Rousey? Absolutely not. But if you need a main event and she's free, she's definitely the one to put on there. And as we've seen, with the exception of UFC 208, which is like the most cursed card ever, anytime Holly Holm has been on an event, the numbers have gone up for that event relative to what they would have been without her. So that is a completely, it's not a bad argument necessarily, because yeah, if someone's gimmick, especially the way Ronda Rousey's was, is that they're undefeated and unbeatable, when they are beaten, you do lose something. But that was a very bad example to use. Any thoughts on that specifically, Zach?
No, I totally agree. And I just don't look at it that way. I look at it as, okay, what and who would Holly Holm have been had she not have had that fight with Ronda, and had she not have knocked her out? Yes, she didn't become the next Ronda Rousey. That doesn't happen. And if you have that expectation is not going to be met. But she became a legitimate star for the UFC in a lot of ways. She's a go-to fighter. She can go out and she can promote. She can do press well. And she gets what it's all about. And that all came from the Ronda Rousey fight and her beating Ronda Rousey. So I'm with you 100%. That's just it's off base, and it just goes back to. To me, it goes back to an incorrect premise for even the conception of this article.
Another point he made in a similar vein, he said, let's face it, Chael Sonnen cuts one hell of a promo, but talking and then getting your face bashed in simply isn't enough. Daniel Cormier is accomplished and is a good promo, but his fights aren't particularly interesting, and most of the time he isn't at all that strong of a draw unless he's got someone like Jon Jones on the other side of the octagon. The list goes on, and WWE can have the same problem. However, that organization and any other wrestling promotion has the built-in advantage over UFC and always will. Well, then explain to me, sir, how the heck the UFC just beat the WWE's brains in on pay-per-view for the last decade. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, right.
I'll grant him this. I think if you're limiting this to television, yeah, the WWE probably is going to have a longer lasting power on traditional linear television. They've been on pro wrestling has been on TV for over 100 years. It's a brand and product people know that probably has a little bit of a wider reach. But to say that because these guys lose and they need someone to draw with, especially a guy like Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen is still getting fights in major TV markets because he still can draw. Yeah, would he have been a better draw if he would have won more? Possibly, but the guy still draw. And the Jon Jones comparison is interesting because Jon Jones also has never been able to draw outside of Chael Sonnen or Daniel Cormier. So that's another point where the example, I think, is right. Very important. And just to preface this, too, earlier in the article, the guy, you know, said he's worked in wrestling. He's wrote about wrestling for a while. He claimed only to be an MMA fan as far as, you know, he follows the big fights that come along and watches them closely. And obviously, he knows some of the names. But I think that is really showing here. And then once again, on the topic of knockouts, if you pay for a heavyweight fight, it could be a 15-second knockout. If you pay for a Rousey fight, it might have been a super quick tap out. The undercard might underwhelm, and then you paid $70 or more in some cases for virtually nothing. That was really asinine because, let's see, was Ronda Rousey kind of the biggest draw the company ever had? And then she was only followed by Conor McGregor, who only has gone the distance once in his entire career in the UFC. So that's, again, they prove it. Knockouts draw. I think we get more of an enjoyment after the fact of McGregor Diaz 2, but something like McGregor Diaz 1 is what gets the sport going and gets the juices flowing. I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what draws in MMA. What do you say to that, Zach?
Totally. No, I agree 100%. And also, I'm not sure this guy likes sports all that much, because look, you can go
to and buy tickets and spend a lot of money on an NBA game, a Major League Baseball game, an NFL game. And just because it lasts 3 hours doesn't mean it's not a 57-3 blowout with the Bears getting destroyed by the Packers and the game being over by the end of the first quarter. Like, that does happen. And I think he's really, really grasping the straws to try to make his argument stick. And the fact of the matter is it just doesn't. I mean, yes, knockouts draw in the UFC. That's what a lot of people want to see that. It's exciting, but that's not the only reason why you watch. There's so many vast reasons to watch the UFC and watch an MMA fight. It's not just a bunch of bloodthirsty 18 to 34 year olds.
No, and he kind of tried to manage your objection by saying, well, even if the game, like a Raptors game, is boring, you're guaranteed 48 minutes of entertainment. That tells me he's never watched a UFC event, because no matter how quick or short it, they all last for relatively the same amount of time. So if you attended the event, you still have the same 4, 5, or 6 hours of entertainment. And then this is where...
And I would just disagree with that outright. Just because the game goes on for 48 minutes doesn't mean it's an entertaining game. It could be just a completely worthless, horrendous game. The length... That's just a bad argument, because that length doesn't mean quality.
Right, and blowouts are terrible for the more traditional sports. Blowouts are great in MMA when, you know, they can cover up from something being lackluster if it's a blowout, so to speak, however you define that in MMA, when someone just runs through the other person. Here's another point where I think he loses his grip on what he's saying about pro wrestling as well. He says, the reason why WWE could make those guys, and he was referring to Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, with the stroke of a pencil and never had to worry about putting money behind someone that might get knocked out. The only concern is injury or personal or legal troubles, but that's inescapable in any business. That undercuts the ability of pro wrestlers now you're talking about, that, you know, guys like Hogan and Warrior were just a product of the machine, is basically what he's saying there. And we're seeing it now with pro wrestling's inability to create the next star. You know, they want that guy to be Roman Reigns, and he is a big star, so I'm not going to say, like, oh, he's a failure and this and that. But it hasn't gone the way they would have liked for that to have gone. If they could just wave that magic wand, they would wave that magic wand. That to me, that just undercuts his entire argument by saying that, you know, WWE is this entertainment a company that waves their magic wand and creates a star. Neither one of these companies can do that. That's why both of these companies right now are starved for stars. That's why a Ronda Rousey and a Brock Lesnar are such valuable entities in both worlds.
No, you're exactly right. I don't even have too much to add to that, because you said it perfectly. I mean, it's a comment like that. Again, it goes back to just a faulty premise, and he doubles down with it there, because it's just, that's not how stars are made in either one of those businesses. I mean, it's just not. Sure, you have guys that you want to feature. You have guys that you would like to see take the top spots. You have guys that you look at in both MMA and pro wrestling where you say, okay, these guys all check off all the boxes of what a major star needs to be, but they have to go out there and do it. In MMA, you got to win fights, and you have to sell pay-per-views. In pro wrestling, you have to go up and down the road. You need to draw money in the cities that you're in. You need to have entertaining matches. There's so much more that goes into it than just a flick of the fingers or a wave of a pencil, as he said. And it really shows a lack of understanding of what he's even trying to argue.
And the final umbrella point I'll make here, and this is another one where he clearly just doesn't have understanding of what's gone on in the history of recent MMA, doesn't even have to go deep. He says, finally, there's another thing that the script does, and in particular, this affects the female competitors. Most of the female UFC fighters aren't pushed or marketed on their appearance. I'll stop right there. Comment on that, Zach.
It's written from just an uneducated point of view. I just think that's to throw that into the mix, to throw looks or sex appeal or whatever it is into the mix. It just I think it's missing the tone of where we are here in 2018, for one thing. One, that's a big thought that crosses into my mind. Like, look, that's not what it's about in MMA, or I don't say, or pro wrestling at this point of view. I mean, look, I don't think it's something that promoters necessarily today look at and they say, okay, this person has to be good looking in order to get a push. Cause that means so many different things to so many different people. The credibility goes out the window when I read stuff like that. Cause it just, that type of argument doesn't do anything for me. And I don't think it paints him in a very good light either.
Well, and I have a slightly different take on it, and let me just read it again. And then I'll say what I'm saying and then see if you agree with it. He said that UFC female fighters aren't pushed or marketed based on their appearance. Now, I would say, wait a minute. Ronda Rousey was never marketed based on her appearance. Paige VanZant is not marketed based on her appearance. Jessica Eye wasn't marketed at one point based on her appearance. Kat Zingano was not marketed based on her appearance. Gina Carano was not marketed and nearly brought to the UFC based on her appearance. Now, let me clarify. I'm not saying these women can't fight. All those women are great fighters, world-class fighters that deserve to be right in the UFC. Those fighters were clearly pushed in a lot of ways. Their looks had a lot to do with why those women were pushed. So don't try to get on this sanctimonious thing that, oh, they don't push attractive, they're attractive fighters. They clearly do. So
yeah, I took that to. Yeah, I mean, I took his comments a little bit differently. I took them as, you know, that to me, I took them as more like present day, whereas the UFC, there aren't fighters to push right now because they aren't good looking. And I don't see it as that. But I think you can still push a female fighter if she's not good looking.
Clearly you can. I think that's a thing of the past. It's still there, yeah. But it's a thing that's past.
Yeah.
And he makes the argument that, well, in the women, you can have you have all these beautiful women who can now wrestle, and he contradicts himself. It's kind of contradicts himself, you know, by saying, you know, you could put these men are attractive to these attractive women, and you can have them wrestle, and especially now the women really can put on some of the best matches of the night. And he's kind of correct in a way, but they're out of the business of hiring models and turning them into wrestlers. That's where I think that actually aligns more even with your argument, is that's just not something that's done that much anymore. Look, we can say what we want about their PR campaign with women and how disingenuous it may seem. The fact of the matter is the quality of the women's wrestling is much higher, and it does seem to be a little bit more merit-based than it was in the past. So I think that's just – it feels like this guy in a lot of ways wrote this article in like 2007. Both his MMA and his pro wrestling takes seem to be unevolved of what's happened by recent evidence. And the reason why we got into this, not to bash a guy, not to read someone else's work on the air, not do the work of our own, but we do a show, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, where we try to discuss the worlds of pro wrestling and MMA by dipping our toes halfway into each side, because we follow MMA, we follow pro wrestling, and we follow the business side and what makes each side tick. That's the whole heart of this show. And when I see articles like this, what gets me is I'm sure our audience is very educated on this subject and it would have similar takes or might have different takes, but have reason takes and reason to be skeptical when they read stuff like this. There's been a lot of talk in wrestling media about the co-opted media. I think pro wrestling consumers are conditioned to be wary of anything like that. Something like Outkick, the coverage, isn't necessarily co-opted media, but it's media that the general sports fan is meant to read and then take the advice of somebody like a Jason Martin, who has worked in professional wrestling and written about professional wrestling as someone of expertise on the subject. And we just broke that down to say, wait, what the heck is this guy talking about? So it's just something, be skeptical of what you read, especially on pro wrestling and MMA, because the mainstream media is a little bit behind on what's going on. And these promotions also do not help when the WWE, you know, carefully selects who they give coverage to.
No,
and you know, their pats on the back to CNN, like Wade's always talking about, or the UFC, who will, you know, until recently, ironically, would only ever talk to Fox and Colin Cowherd. So I just think it needs to be brought to the attention that these mainstream outlets, even though the coverage isn't a mainstream outlet, they don't always miss the mark. So read what you read from them with a bit of skepticism. Do you have anything to say on that, Zach, before we go to our last break?
Yeah, and look, I want to give the author a little bit of credit. I think it's an interesting article, and I think it's an interesting take, an interesting discussion to have. But for as much as pro wrestling and MMA and mixed martial arts are so closely tied together in their historical roots and how they go to business and how much creating stars is such a big part of both businesses, having somebody like Fox having the TV rights of one or the other, you really have to make a calculated decision in what kind of business you want to be involved with. Do you want to be involved with something that's sport, or do you want to be involved with something that's more of a show? And I think even though there's parallels between the two, very, very close historical parallels, they still are different products. And that's why I think it's really hard to look at it from the premise that he looked at it and analyzed it in, is because they're close in terms of their history and they're close in terms of the nature of the business, but the end product is very different. And I think you have to look at it through that lens if you're going to analyze it.
Yeah, and that's where our last two topics kind of tie together in analyzing the similarities and the difference of the sports and the nuance that is involved in that. Let's go to our last break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about what we saw last week with Ronda Rousey and what we expect here in the next couple of weeks.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Well, Zach, after last Monday night, you know, shortly after this show got wrapped up, we got our answer officially of what Ronda Rousey is going to be doing at WrestleMania. She's in the mixed tag, teaming up with fellow Olympian Kurt Angle and taking on the team of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Obviously, this isn't a surprise. What most people projected, you know, going pretty far back, even actually years, if you think about what happened at the WrestleMania a few years ago. Are you at all surprised about this? Or is this the good move? We've talked about this before, but how do you feel about it now that we're here in real time?
Yeah, no, definitely not surprised. Like you said, you saw it coming since about WrestleMania 31 in some fashion. It's here. I think it's the right move too. I think, you know, easing her in to pro wrestling in a tag team match is smart. I think putting her in there with two of the best heels in Triple H and Stephanie McMahon is also very smart. I think they'll be able to control a lot of variables in that match at WrestleMania because of the talent that's in the ring. And it's a great way to showcase her in a big way, but at the same time, protect her against just natural things that she hasn't experienced yet because she's green in the business. So on that note, I think they've really hit it out of the park here. And I think they've delivered and she's delivered to this point.
She did get physical also for the first time last week on Raw. She gave a rough Samoan drop to Stephanie. What did you think about her first her first instance of physicality?
Oh man, yeah, a little rough, a little rough. I think she's gotta tighten it up a little bit there. But I was glad to see something. I think her physical presence is such a big part of who she is. It's a big part of who she was in the UFC. It's a big reason why she's, you know, a worldwide athlete. And I think it's smart for them to showcase that ahead of the WrestleMania match. I don't think putting Stephanie in the armbar or anything like that is the way to go yet. I think there's still a payoff to be had there, but teasing a little bit of physicality here and there is good, because that's part of who she is, and that's part of why people want to watch her. So I think you have to walk a fine line with it. You don't want her to be having full-fledged matches, and you don't want her out there decimating Stephanie every week here until WrestleMania. You got to be careful with it. But last week, in terms of announcing the big WrestleMania match and then coinciding that announcement with some physical activity, I think that was a smart move. Now I would pull back, temper back on that physical involvement for at least a couple weeks here, if not all the way to WrestleMania, and have the crowd wanting more by the time Mania shows up at the beginning of April. But I had no problem with it last week.
And very, very quickly, one last thing we'll discuss on here, just peripherally. After Fastlane last night, are you excited with how the WrestleMania card is shaking out?
Yeah, I really am. I really am. I think they've, you know, I look back and I think about, oh man, like throughout the last year of all the kind of ups and downs and the eye rolls about, you know, this finish there, or this booking decision there, et cetera, et cetera. And then you get to a WrestleMania card like this that is going to have Lesnar against Reigns. It's going to have Nakamura against AJ Styles, Charlotte against Asuka, presumably Undertaker against John Cena. And you look at, and all of those matches, they make a lot of sense. You know, I don't think any of them are completely out of left field. And you got to look back on the year and go, wow, okay, maybe the WWE did something right here and how they set this up, because that card is coming together quite nicely. And even with guys like Dean Ambrose and Samoa Joe on the shelf, they've really found a way to have a really big event with some really big stars in some really big matches. So I am happy with it. I hope that the builds in Styles and Nakamura and Charlotte and Asuka are smooth. But I think as a whole right now, about 5 weeks out, four weeks out, all things are looking really good on my front.
Yeah, the only problem I have with it is I just can't even keep track of it at this point. Like, I saw someone on Twitter put a list of the official matches and then the what looks to come together, and it's like, wow, like that, like my brain can't fathom everything that's going to happen on the card. Like, there's too much, and obviously that'll become a detriment later on during the show, when the show is like 9 hours and we're all very tired at the end of the thing and complaining that the show went too long. But they always try to say that it's a company that's supposed to be something for everyone. Well, this card is literally going to have one thing for every possible demographic in the audience. So
yep.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm interested to see how it plays out. Don't know if it's going to be any good, but I am looking forward to it. All right, Zach, let's get out of here. Let's get to watching Monday Night Raw for the week so we can discuss Stephanie and Ronda's segment for next week. Anything you want to plug on your way out here?
That's right. No, just keep it locked to MMATorch.com. Should have a take piece up sometime this week on Brian Ortega coming off his big win at UFC 222. Other than that, yeah, 205 Live. I'm the beat guy for PWTorch.com every Tuesday night. You can check out my report for 205 Live there. And then I also have an Artistry of Wrestling column that goes up every weekend at PWTorch.com that you could also check out. And for all of that, you can follow me on Twitter at Z Heydorn, at Z H E Y D O R N.
And Zach's being modest here, because he was actually on the post-show podcast with Wade Keller last week, where his resume was somehow even longer than the resume he just gave. So that's an amazing feat by him. You could follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos. Follow the brand MMA Torch. Go to PW Torch, PW Podcast, PW Torch VIP. Let's hear a little something about PW Torch VIP, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.